Before we switched to the secret ballot, voting day was a lot more exciting. There were outdoor festivities and lots of drinking, and everyone knew how you voted. Don DeBatz is my next guest. He's an historian at Flinders University in Australia and a fellow at the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities. Don, all American elections use the secret ballot now, but you were stunned to learn we didn't used to.
That's right. In fact, for most of American history, the United States didn't use anything that even approached secrecy. People would come together at the local county courthouse, and they would have horse races. They would have picnics. It was a civic occasion. It's the kind of world that de Tocqueville loved. He thought this was great, that people were openly declaring their politics. And he said there's no reason why an American won't declare his vote.
And was this out loud voting? Mr. Don DeBatz, aye?
Well, there were two different ways that this was done. One way was out loud voting, which was called viva voce, or by voice, or they voted by ticket, and that was very, very identifiable, oftentimes brightly colored, with distinctive marks. It made it easy for people who didn't read and didn't write to participate in politics.
If I were voting by ticket, how would people know who I had voted for if I could scribble down the name and stuff it in the ballot box without you seeing?
Well, that was very hard to do because you had to go up on a platform. You were before a bunch of people. People trying to coerce you. People trying to perhaps block your way. People offering you a drink. Lots and lots of booze in these elections. It really is very unregulated. So you would stand on a platform, and your name, well, not your name, because, of course, women couldn't vote,
right,
but the man's name would be called out. And then either you said, I'm going to vote for so-and-so, and said that, or an election clerk read that out from the ticket that you gave, or you took that brightly colored, distinctively marked ticket, and you put it in a box. So the whole notion of secrecy is not something that people had. Basically, politics was about something that was communal. It was about going as a kind of a powerful person, because you were a voter. And you were sort of asserting yourself. You're saying, this is what I want to be my political voice.
But do you think there was also a lot of reticence and consternation? You don't want to admit that you're not voting for your good business buddy. You actually are voting for George Washington.
Well, you had to make a call. What is my vote about? Is it what I want, or is it about what my community wants, what my group wants? And people knew it.
And today we have ballots. You're saying people had tickets back then. What's the difference?
Well, today we vote on something the government gives us. Then we use something that the party gave us. So you could end up with two main parties, but all sorts of splinter groups with their own tickets. And parties sort of didn't like this. One of the reasons why parties were quite pleased to get rid of the ticket system and move to a ballot that was produced by the state, because that meant there was more control over these proliferation of third parties. Here, for example, is one from California, and this is the regular working man's ticket from San Francisco County, and what the ticket says is the Chinese must go. Here's another one from the other side of the political spectrum, which is the regular citizen's independent ticket. And the script here says, down with the bosses. And here is the working man strangling the boss. Let me just show you a problem that went with tickets. Any splinter group could produce their own ticket. And so we have the regular Republican ticket with one picture. Then we have the regular Republican reform ticket with a different picture and a different set of candidates. Then there's the agronaut ticket. Then there's the Property Owners Independent Improvement Party ticket. Here's the Colored Citizens Independent ticket. Here's the Licensed Taxpayers Union Anti-Prohibition Anti-High License ticket. And those are all versions of the Republican Party ticket. They all have the same people at the top of the ticket and totally different people at the bottom of the ticket. And then they're the Democratic tickets, about the same number.
Wow. That would be very hard to cast a ballot.
Yeah. Well, you pick the one that you liked, but you didn't always know quite what you were doing.
How long had we been doing either this ticket system or the viva voce, the by-voice voting that you were describing?
Since the United States began.
Really?
Yeah. This is the only way that people voted. Everybody in the United States who could vote voted this way from the beginning up until the 1890s. The best of all possible bits of evidence is a painting. This is hanging in the St. Louis Art Gallery in St. Louis, Missouri. But the thing for me that is most important about this is right in the background is a guy with a quill pen in his hand. And what he is doing is writing down how each of these voters votes. It's perfect data. And that's what the Viva Voce elections produce. They produce poll books. And where those poll books survive, we can recreate what every single person did at that election.
So what was great about Viva Voce voting? What do you admire about it?
Well, I look at this picture and I think, isn't that what politics should be? Shouldn't you stand up and declare what you believe in? Shouldn't you be willing to do that in front of your friends and neighbors? Why do we have to make it secret? Why do we have to make it so private? Why do we have to take all of the public excitement, the festival, out of elections? I mean, this was the period when turnout in the United States was at its highest.
What was the downside?
Well, the downside was, of course, the booze. And, of course, what this whole public voting allowed, because everybody knew how you voted, was pressure, was intimidation. There was no notion that you could tell one person, yes, I'm going to vote for the Republicans, I'm going to vote for the Democrats, and then not do it, because they could see if you did it or didn't do it. And when blacks get the vote, this is pretty serious stuff. And the accounts of what went on in some of those elections, you know, it really was pretty awful. There were murders. There were beatings. There were threats. So there are 20 years when the former slaves, when African-American men are voting orally in front of their black and white neighbors. So there are lots of accounts of intimidation, of switches being left outside of their front doors, written threats posted with people named. If you don't vote, we will run you out of this county.
You also have a ledger that shows a former slave voting next to his former master.
That's right. A slave just 4 years before. And there he is standing, voting just after his former master votes.
Did they vote the same or differently?
No. They didn't vote at all the same. They voted exactly opposite. So the master vote was a Democrat. And of course, the African American was voting Republican.
What led to reform? What changed this system to become the secret ballot system we have now?
Three things. One, there were real reformers who wanted secrecy because of intimidation. Secondly, parties are interested in something different, too. And then, third, in the South, there's a great interest after the Civil War and after black enfranchisement of finding ways to disenfranchise African Americans.
Why would the secret ballot disenfranchise them?
Because you had to be literate. You had to be able to read the ballot. It simply listed names and offices. And if you couldn't read, you couldn't vote.
So wouldn't the reformers who were trying to get rid of the intimidation of the public voting, wouldn't they have realized that this would disenfranchise the African Americans?
They would have seen that as a problem. But the greater good, and it wasn't just African Americans that were leading to this reform. I mean, the British were interested in reform. They were interested in the intimidation of workers.
So did the secret ballot in America in the 1890s come about largely to disenfranchise people or
no.
largely to make the system better?
It was to make the system better, to take politics out of the street. I think that's the thing that was probably most important, that politics would no longer be that jostling kind of thing where there was, you know, liquor being poured and there were drunks being brought up the stairs to cast their vote. It was to sanitize this.
How bad was the liquor problem?
Well, there's a famous account of an election involving George Washington, and it's in a book called Gentlemen Freeholders by Charles Sidner, a famous American historian. And it actually lists the amount of alcohol which is put together at the county courthouse for the election in which Washington is running. And it has 28 gallons of rum, 50 gallons of rum punch, 34 gallons of wine, 46 gallons of beer, and 2 gallons of cider royal. And they figured that amounted to about a quart and a half per voter.
Oh, gosh.
So it was.
It was like a wedding day.
Well, yeah. It was a celebration. It was a festival. And that's what elections were. And so people, reformers, wanted to end that, just like they wanted to create better sanitation systems. But they sanitized politics. And what they did was to take a lot of the fun out of it.
Well, Don DeBatz, thank you for sharing your insights on this with me today on With Good Reason.
You're entirely welcome. It's a good deal of fun.
Don DeBatz is a professor of history at Flinders University and a fellow at the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities. Major support for With Good Reason is provided by an anonymous donor and by the law firm of McGuire Woods. Support also comes from the University of Virginia Health System, connecting doctors and patients through telemedicine to deliver high-quality care throughout Virginia, the U.S., and the world. UVAHealth.com. With Good Reason is produced by the Virginia Foundation for the Humanities. Elliot Majerzik and Allison Quance are our associate producers. Our assistant producer is Lilia Fuchin. Andrew Windham is our executive producer, and Jeannie Palin handles listener services. Miranda Bennett is our intern. Visit us at withgoodreasonradio.org or download the podcast on iTunes. To comment, call 877-451-5098. I'm Sarah McConnell. Thanks for listening.